1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 11. Let a woman learn quietly with all submissiveness. I do not permit a woman to teach or to exercise authority over a man. Rather, she is to remain quiet. For Adam was formed first, then Eve. And Adam was not deceived, but the woman was deceived and became a transgressor. Yet she may be saved through childbearing if she continue in faith and love and holiness with self-control. Gross.
Disgusting.
That's real, real gross. Hey, if you think that this is the good book, you should call us and talk about it, because the show starts right now. Everybody, welcome to the Atheist Experience. I'm your host, Forrest Valkai, and I'm joined today by the incomparable Jim Barrows. How are you doing today, man?
Too bad. How about yourself?
I'm fucking fantastic, man. I have a great day.
You started out with some science earlier?
Yeah, of course.
We're here live, and if you guys don't come live, then you don't get to see Forrest do cool science.
I happen to have some equipment with me, so before the show, we were all screwing around with liquid nitrogen in the parking lot, just freezing stuff, making things explode. It's a great time, man. It's always a party here at the Free Thought Library, so if you can make it down for a live show, it'd be a lot of fun. All these people did. Check out our amazing audience out there. We are live in the studio on the last weekend of every month, so if you can ever make it down, come see Talk Heathen Live, come see AXP Live. It's a barrel of laughs. It's always a great time. Before we get started, though, there's a couple things that I want to let everybody know. Number one is that the Atheist Experience is a product of the Atheist Community of Austin, which is a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting positive atheism and the separation of religion and government. Also, we have a question of the week going on here, because we've started this new cool thing, a sort of a share your experience question down in the comments. Last week we asked, if it weren't for blank, I would still believe in God. And we have some answers here. The first one is Blake Walker. If it weren't for God being powerless to stop the devil from corrupting my soul, I'd still believe in God. I mean, honestly. Another one is from Todd Sullivan. If it wasn't for how much fun it is to be a sinner, I'd still be a Christian. Hard agree. And then finally, number one from QC. If it wasn't for people using thoughts and prayers in place of actually doing something, I'd still believe in God. They can get behind that one as well.
Yeah.
And we have a new question for this week as well. If you're interested in participating and being a little bit more part of the community, we've got, what did the caller say to make Johnny look like this? So leave your comments down below. We'll pick our favorite comments from the comment section and read them live the next time we run this show. Let us know, what made Johnny P look so dejected and so distraught? Jim, what do you think?
I think it was because somebody believes because their feet don't smell.
They believe because their feet don't smell. You know what, though? We've heard worse reasons, honestly.
Yeah, we probably have.
With that, the lines are already filling up and everything. Before we get started, is there anything in particular that you wanted to throw out at anybody?
No.
You ready to jump right in?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, man. So we've got all sorts of people here that are already wanting to talk, and I'm going to go ahead and jump into Art, pronouns he, him, from Pennsylvania, says, atheists are quitters. You're absolutely right. Sometimes. Art, you're on AXP. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Doing well, man. Never had a bad day in my life.
Okay.
So what do you mean, atheists are quitters? I can't tell if you're joking or not.
No, I'm not joking. Let me begin with the fact that humans have invented thousands of gods, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, from that, I could draw two conclusions, not a proof, but two conclusions.
Mm-hmm.
One is that since we assume all those gods like Thor and whatever are fictional, it would be easy to suspect that gods of today are fictional. Jesus, for instance.
Mm-hmm. I could vibe with that.
Because it's been so pervasive, we might think that maybe there's something there to be discovered. And I'm going to turn to something I read about chemistry very briefly. The alchemists believed in the four elements, and they were trying to make lead into gold.
Mm.
They failed. And I read that they precipitated or helped the development of chemistry.
Yeah. It's a big part of the history of science, yeah.
Et cetera. So the idea is, I think that perhaps there's something out there to be discovered. And so it's kind of like you have the Hegel, you have the thesis of theism, you have the antithesis of atheism. And I'd say that perhaps there's a synthesis, but atheists don't go there. In other words, they stop at the antithesis.
Right.
And can I just say one more thing before I stop? Atheism is good. It's disconfirming evidence. And if you want to find the truth, you should not only look for evidence which supports what you believe, but evidence which contradicts what you believe. So I've gained a lot from listening to atheists and reading atheist material. It's good stuff. but I feel that there's another step to go and they don't take it. And that's my whole case.
What's the step? What is the step?
The step is that they go from, some do, they go from a rather naive, silly idea of God. Let's say like Thor and Jesus, like, you know, like God impregnated a woman that wasn't his wife so their baby could grow up to be tortured. You know, they go from that idea to there is no God.
Well,
I think that somewhere in between is maybe some sort of ultimate reality or something that deserves.
You understand just how silly the whole Jesus story is, right? I mean, because it is literally what you just said, right? You've got an omni-God who effectively built the world so he could kill his son.
Yeah, I agree. Perfect.
Right? And that is not a God that's worthy of worship. That is not a you know, there's no evidence for it, right? Because it's not rational to accept things as true when you don't have sufficient good evidence to do so. And so, yeah, I mean, throwing out things because they're ridiculous and is perfectly valid.
Yeah, I would build off of what Jim was saying, because like you're absolutely right. The premise as a whole is fatuous and it doesn't really work. But even if I wanted to give it a lot more, you know, leeway and kind of go into speak to your point a little bit about like, well, okay, yeah, we can reject Christianity and we can reject these big God claims, but that's not to say that there isn't some sort of supernatural thing that's guiding planetary formation and guiding evolution and it's kind of participating in this way. And for that, I would just say, okay, show me evidence. Like that's the thing. It may be that there is something out there that's a little bit beyond our understanding. But until we have good reason to believe that, it would be silly for us to then say, well, just based on the possibility, I guess I better assume. It reminds me there's an old story that is probably apocryphal, but it's pervasive, of Napoleon meeting with Pierre-Simon Laplace, the great French physicist. And Laplace has done all this research and published all this work in mathematics and astronomy and in physics and all sorts of amazing things, discovering how the universe works. And Napoleon says, I praise you for all this work of discovering, you know, all the inner mechanisms of the universe around us, but I notice you never talked about the universe's designer. And Laplace says, I had no need for that hypothesis. It works just fine without it. And so from an atheist perspective, you know, I'm a scientist. I study science and teach it for a living. As I do that, I could say, okay, so here's everything I know about evolution, and here's everything I know about life, and here's everything. And also, there's this magic too. But why? Why would I need to do that? What am I missing out on by not doing that until proven that I should, you know?
Okay, well, first of all, I'm sorry.
You're just fine. Go ahead.
Okay, first of all, I would say that supernatural is a vacuous term because we don't know the limits of the natural world. So what I'm talking about is finding... As you say, I haven't found it, but something like some sort of supreme being, not in the sense of a person, maybe, but in the sense of like ultimate ground of existence, something like what the Taoists talk about. Or what I'm saying is that we're not, and also, let me get back to an original point, because so many cultures have created so many gods and goddesses, I think it's easy to think that maybe it's something there, but they're just not getting there.
Lots of cultures have dragons too,
right?
Is there something there?
I'm sorry, what was that? I missed that.
Lots of cultures have traditions of dragons as well. Cultures all over the world have stories about dragons. Do we need to be thinking about dragons as maybe a possibility as well?
Or is it much more reasonable to conclude that all dragon stories start with
a dinosaur fossil or something? Yeah.
Thank you. And it's the same thing with the storytelling you're talking about, right? We like to have explanations for things. And so, you know, something that we can't explain, God is a perfectly good explanation until you have better explanations. And now we're at a point where we can look at the entire world and go, it's just not necessary.
Yeah, that really is what it boils down to, for me at least, is, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head when you started this call by talking about alchemy. They didn't know what an atom was. They didn't know what the 118 elements that we know about today were. There's a reason why we still talk about, you know, oxygenation whenever something is losing electrons. We call it oxidation because even though it's losing something, it's getting lighter. And so we used to think, oh, it's turning into oxygen. We have these fossils, these vestiges, these artifacts of early science because we didn't know any better at the time. And now we do. And so with religion, you're right. Lots of cultures, pretty much every culture all over the world has some sort of supernatural, some sort of religious backing to what they think happened in the world. They have some religious explanation for the world around them. But because it's their first attempt at explaining the natural world, it's also their worst attempt. We didn't know where lightning came from. I know everything that happens is caused by me. So if I'm not doing the lightning, somebody else is. I'm going to name him Thor. You know what I mean? But now we understand how electrons work. We understand a little bit more about weather. We don't need that anymore. The same way that we don't need, you know, alchemy to try to turn lead into gold. We know how gold is produced. We know we can make it through you know, nuclear fusion if we really wanted to. We know so much more, and it's so much cooler without those that supernatural stuff involved.
And also just Occam's razor, right? It's the explanation that has the fewest assumptions that covers everything that is best. And as atheists, we have one less assumption than you do, right? We have one less premise than you do, right? You've added God for no particular reason that we can determine. And so why do we need God for anything?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't say you need it. All I'm saying is, let's put it this way. I'm saying maybe the alchemists are like the religious people, and they were all wrong and they were doomed to failure. And I'm saying, by this analogy, maybe the atheists are like the guys who said to the alchemists, forget about it, give it up, just forget about it. But because the alchemists persisted, they eventually chemistry.
Right, but those alchemists persisted to do tests and to attempt to prove that you could do it.
Yeah.
Right? And had the chemistry not evolved from that, they'd have been a dead end. Like so many, like phrenology and so many other so-called sciences that have, hit the stage, so to speak. And so, again, the time to believe something is when you have sufficient good evidence. We don't have sufficient good evidence to believe. Occam's razor tells us that if we don't need that particular premise, then we shouldn't use it. And furthermore, believing in God, which version do you want to pick from? Because there's at least 1,000 different denominations with 1,000 different gods. Some of those people say that gay people should burn. And some say they shouldn't. And then you've got the quote that Forrest read earlier about not allowing a woman to teach a man. I mean, we've had some phenomenal women, some of whom were responsible for expanding the Christian faith, who did some amazing things with teaching and with science. And yet, if that had been followed exactly, then guess what? None of those things would have happened. And so limiting one gender of the human race just seems incredibly stupid, given that both genders are equally intelligent, equally smart, and equally driven, and can do many of the same things. It just seems stupid. And if you have to pick a religion, now you have to go in, especially with Christianity, now you have to go in and interpret a book. A book that was not designed to be a science book, was not written to be interpreted in only one way. It's just a series of stories that you get to interpret any which way you want. And they're all valid. The guys at the Baptist, Westboro Baptist Church, are just as valid as the most liberal church here in Austin. They both have very, very valid beliefs. They're both based on the Bible, and they're both equally correct in their interpretation of the Bible, because that's all it is interpretation. So why limit yourself in terms of that when you can look at everything that can be done and look at, and why restrict anything? Why be bigoted? Why be misogynistic about it?
Yeah, I think that really does speak to the fact that, like, you know, because I understand what you're saying, Art. You're not saying, like, necessarily specifically only the Bible type. You're just, that is the gambit, isn't it, though? Is that, like, you have to pick...
No. Can I elaborate on that? I think that what I'm envisioning doesn't exist, or at least... But the epistemological method would have... If you're going to do a genuine search, you have to give up the silly epistemological method where someone said something or wrote it down, therefore it's true.
Right, mm-hmm.
The search would have to take any writing as just mere writing and any alleged God as just... You know, whatever. But what I'm saying is that I think a search could be done and something could be found that would make sense to both sides. Now, I don't know that's a fact, but what I'm saying, let's put it this way. If evidence is ever presented, it probably won't be an atheist who found it. It'll probably be someone who continued searching.
I would strongly disagree with that. And the reason is because the whole purpose behind scientific endeavor, and I'm not trying to conflate science and atheism here, but like the whole purpose behind scientific thinking is prove me wrong, prove myself wrong. You never accept a hypothesis. You fail to reject one. And so, like, if you're talking about who's actually going to be doing the discoveries, there's lots of times over the history of science where we have found something that shattered our worldviews, that completely changed the way that we thought of and interacted with the natural world around us. That happens a lot. And if you study the history of especially biology, it's over and over and over and over and over again, knocking us off our pedestals and changing the way that we see the natural world, changing the way we see our place in it. If anybody's going to change their mind when presented with new evidence, it's going to be an atheist or a scientist or maybe someone who's both. If you show a religious person, you know, if someone's a deeply devout Christian and you show them hard proof that a different God exists, I guarantee they're going to be a lot more resistant to that evidence than somebody like Jim and I, who are just saying, prove it. Prove anything beyond what we understand as naturalistic. You know, prove any supernatural thing, even including what you said, which I think was a great point, that supernatural, you know, if something supernatural exists, it exists in the natural world, therefore it isn't supernatural. But like, if anybody's going to change their mind, science has shown throughout history that that's what we're best at. That's what we do. We thought the world was this way, and then holy crap, we found this other thing that completely relativity, fossils, everything that took our world apart, quantum mechanics. It changed the way we saw reality, and we rolled with it, as opposed to the people who are, and again, I know you're not just talking about Christianity, but contradict that with, or compare that to the people who are still looking at an Iron Age sex manual and saying, this is where we need to draw laws from today. I don't agree with your premise that we wouldn't be the ones to accept the new evidence.
No, I'm saying you wouldn't be the ones to find it, I think, because you're not looking for it. That's what I think I'm saying.
But were we looking for fossils?
What do you think this show is?
Were we looking for evidence of evolution when you know Nicola Steno discovered that tongue stones are actually shark's teeth, and that led to a series over the next 200 years, all the way up to Cuvier first publishing the idea of extinction? We weren't looking for that information. We found it. Someone presented us with, oh shit, this isn't actually what we thought. So like, I don't know, man. We've been going for 15 minutes, but we got to move on to the next call, but I'll give you the last word. I think that we're a little bit more open-minded than you might give us credit for.
Okay. Well, my last word is thanks for taking the call. Thanks for giving me all the time. And one last thing, Matthew, I believe 15:1-4 for me is the worst quote in the Bible. You ought to look it up.
Matthew 15:1-4?
Yeah. Jesus says that God commands that the cursing child must be put to death.
Yeah.
I think that's worse than, well, maybe not the worst, but I think that's up there and you don't hear it very often. But anyway, thank you for taking my call.
I appreciate you talking to us. Seriously, yeah. It's been a great call. And I agree. There's a lot of those in the Bible. It's a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Art. I really appreciate you calling in. Have an awesome day, man.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye. Nice talking to you. See you.
Yeah.
Hey, if you like what we do and you want to support us, there's a few ways that you can do that. You can become a member of this channel for as little as 99 cents a month. Just click the join button down below the video there. That'll give you access to all sorts of cool super chats or special chat emojis and whatnot. If you're in the chat right now, throw out some of those chat emojis, show everybody what they're missing. You can also send a super chat with a question or a comment or something that will be read on air live during the show. We've actually gotten a few of those as we've been talking here. We got $10 from John Duane. I'm going to mispronounce all of your names, and I do not apologize for it. There's $10 from John Duane. Two great humans from a super fan. Thank you, Jim, and thank you, Dan, for the picture of Russell's teapot. Keep up the great work, ACA. Love that. Greg Murkowski sent a $10 as well. Two doses of Forrest and Jim to boot today. Sorry I didn't have a second silly crab question this afternoon. He's referring to Talk Heathen, where I was hosting there, and we talked about crabs. 5 pounds of what? I don't know. From Paul Hamish, Christian says to Johnny, if you don't believe in Jesus, you burn in hell, but he loves you. That would make me have that same face as well. And then Wandering Walrus sent in 2 pounds as well. Very, very kind of you. Thank you so much. If you want your Super Chat read live on air, please send it to us. Do you have something?
No, I was going to say, John had asked last time I was here, I think it was last month, for a picture with some hosts and Russell's teapot, which is...
Oh, that one over there. I didn't realize what you were saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want to bring it down here? We'll take a snapshot. Everybody get your cameras ready in the audience. This is a once in a lifetime thing. Screenshot that and make it your desktop wallpaper.
Yeah.
For true fans of the show.
Yeah. And it was just Dan and I, so we took some pictures for him and sent it to him. So.
That's excellent.
Yeah. We're always happy to do stuff like that for fans when we have time.
Yeah, man. We're in a silly, goofy mood. So we've got a bunch of other people here, and you know, there's a lot of good questions. Oh, my goodness. I do want to do this one for sure, but I also like this one. Which okay. do you prefer? Which one of these?
Yeah, let's just do the top one. And
cool. Sounds good to me. So we're going to go with Michael, pronouns they, them, from Colorado, wants to talk about the proposition that faith is required for both atheism and theism. How are you doing today, Michael?
Hi, I am well. How are you?
I'm
doing
awesome, man.
Awesome.
So, yeah, do you want to expound a little bit on what you're saying here? Was this a specific circumstance you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, I was having a conversation with my friend Jen this morning about their transition from regular Christianity, so just Protestantism, over into Catholicism.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about how they have just as much faith as like an atheist does. And my alarm bells in my mind went off. And I was like, well, that doesn't sound right. Because I listened to you guys for like the last 2 years, every right. single show.
Yeah.
And that doesn't ring anything. And I'm like, that doesn't sound right.
Yeah. And
so my question I wanted to ask was, how do you reply to someone that says they have faith in what they believe, just as an atheist has faith in what they believe?
Yeah,
so you
I
go first.
To
yeah.
do a reframe of their point that atheists found evidence, or that their point of saying that atheists found evidence for there not being a God to that there is insufficient evidence.
Right? Yeah.
I wanted to know how to reply when they said they found insufficient evidence for themselves, but not for all.
Right. So sometimes Christians in particular and theists in general will conflate faith and belief. And they will think those two words are synonymous, and they are not. And faith, the two most common usages are complete trust or confidence in someone or something. And the second most common usage is strong belief in God or in the doctrines of religion based on spiritual apprehension rather than proof. And so the first thing is with that first usage of faith, complete trust or confidence. I don't know of any scientist or report that is complete trust or confidence in the science itself. It's always in terms of probability. You know, we see this happen in 90% of the cases, 80% of the cases. We see this happening as a percentage, and very rarely do we see things in, you know, 100% of the time. And sometimes it's when we see something happening 100% of the time that actually happens. So we don't have complete trust or confidence in someone or something. We apportion our belief to the evidence. So if the evidence is 80% confident, we are 80% confident. So we don't have that. Belief, on the other hand, I prefer the philosophical definition, which is the attitude one has towards a proposition. So you can have that attitude to accept a proposition, or you can have the attitude that you reject a proposition. And so faith and belief are not the same things in any way, shape, or form. And so, no, we do not have faith like a Christian does. We just can't have faith like a Christian does. And the second sense of the word faith, and in the first word of the faith, some atheists may think that, but honestly, we should apportion our belief to the evidence. And if the evidence isn't 100%, then we shouldn't be either. So we really shouldn't be one, but I would admit that there are probably some atheists who do have that definition of faith for science. And, you know, there's science in general, and then there's, you know, particular areas of science, physics, or particular claims like gravity. So that's kind of where I would go, is just say, hey, you don't understand the difference between faith and belief, and, you know, point out that, no, we simply don't. And also, most atheists that I'm aware of are agnostic atheists, and we use the atheist label because it's easier, and me personally, I use it because it's funnier, than just the agnostic label. So, you know, we also have to get into exactly what we mean, which is why we don't use the philosophical definition of atheism here, which is simply that we lack a belief in a God. We reject the truth claim that there is a God. Some of us will accept the claim that there are no gods, and some of us reject that claim either until they have sufficient evidence. Those people are technically agnostics. So that's kind of long-winded.
Yeah, I would say just, you know, to because you said everything I would say and then more. Yeah. That's great. Like, just, you know, the whole thing boils down to, I don't believe you. that doesn't require faith. That's the opposite of that. It's in, you know, I always try to summarize to say, you know, if I tell you there's an elephant under this table, you can say yes, there is, or no, there isn't. And both of those require faith. But if you just say, I don't believe you, you're not making a claim. You're waiting for me to give you the proof. And so that's kind of where we're at as atheists. Mm-hmm. But if you really wanted to give it like a simplified thing, you know, if your TV is turned off, what are you watching? What channel are you watching? What are you, you know, what are you using the TV? Like, that's kind of where we're at now. We don't have a belief system. We don't have a faith. We don't have a religion that we're participating in. It is the absence of all of that. And so, like, what channel is the TV on when it's off is like, you know, what faith do you have as an atheist? It's or what hair color is bald? You know what I mean? It's just not really the same thing at all. Those are quippy ways that I would say it, because I am a smug and sarcastic young man. But, like, I'm sure you'd find a better way to do it.
The best way I was able to come up with, like, a type of explanation before the show started earlier today was, like, an idea of, like, the cookie jar covered in aluminum foil. Mm. And then saying that I believe there's cookies in that cookie jar, but I don't need to look. And then I go to look at the cookie jar inside, open up the cookie jar and look and see that there's no cookies and tell them, I don't see any cookies. And then saying to me that, well, you don't see any cookies, enough cookies for you.
Right.
That'd be like an equivalent to what
there's
you're
tiny
saying.
Cookies, you guys. Yeah, no, I totally get it, man. And like, that's the thing is, the very oftentimes, you know, theists will attempt to drag atheism or science down to their level by saying that it's faith-based. You know, you believe in evolution. You believe in you have faith in atheism, whatever like that. And they'll probably see it as trying to find common ground. But at the end of the day, you know, you can't escape the fact that if you don't have a reason for believing things and you believe it anyway, that's an issue. And so the best argument is this, is like, well, you do it too. It's like, if that were true, that wouldn't mean you're right. It would mean that we are both wrong. So like, it's even if I agreed with you, you're still in the wrong here. It's like, yeah, man, I wish you all the best with it. And I think like, if you have any other questions you wanted to know about specifically, we'd be happy to take them.
I have one more question. I'm so sorry.
Oh, it's fine.
So I was having a conversation with my father about evolution.
Yeah.
And he said that he doesn't believe in evolution specifically because it doesn't tell us what the first seed was. And I had no idea how to, like...
Evolution has nothing to do with that.
I basically just sent him...
I would just point out, that's abiogenesis. That's talking about how life started. And there's a lot of really cool evidence for that. There's a lot of different hypotheses and ideas of, like, how things could have gone on. And we have cool evidence for most of them. But, like, if you want to know, like, how life began, you can start looking at the fact that, like, there's four major macromolecules of life. Those are proteins, carbohydrates, lipids, and nucleic acids. Those are made individually of amino acids, sugars, fatty acids, and bases, nuclear bases, nitrogenous bases. And we found literally all of those things in space. They make themselves. So they all self-assemble. And we're now getting really cool evidence of, like, how they also polymerize and combine to form the really cool big macromolecules that we use for life all by themselves, all in space usually. And so, like, yeah, I can't tell you, oh, this was the first life form. Its name was Tim and it looked like that. You know, I can't do that because, you know, for a lot of reasons. But in terms of, like, understanding a little bit more about how life started, there's a whole field of research called astrobiology that's focused on that. I always encourage people, go Google the astrobiology primer from NASA. It's a relatively pretty short little document that'll tell you, like, everything we know so far with citations included. But as far as way back is concerned, that is not the point of evolution. And so it's kind of like saying, I don't believe in plate tectonics because it doesn't tell you how the planet formed. That's not what it's there for. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Anyway, I hope that helps, cool. Man. But thank you so much for calling in, Michael. I really appreciate your time. Helped.
Appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Have an awesome rest of your day. Before we move on, I got to tell you, yes, you, the person watching this video at this very moment, that we now have a channel that houses all of the ACA shows in audio podcast form. So you can hear our smooth and sensuous voices without seeing me flail my hands around like a lunatic. You can visit tiny.cc/AEN podcast. You can listen to all the latest shows from The Atheist Experience, Talk Heathen, Truth Wanted, Nonprofits, all together in one channel. And you can support us on Patreon at tiny.cc/PatreonAXP. These are all ways you can help us do more of this.
And crazy science in the parking lot.
And crazy science in the parking lot, yeah. Oh, man. We've got a lot of cool calls, and we have several of them that are focused on biology. Do you want to jump into a couple of those and
kind of
see
absolutely.
What we can play with? Okay, so you were talking about this guy earlier, so let's jump into Elias, pronounce he, him, from Tennessee. I wanted to talk about binary sex and gamete production. That's what I've got on the call screen. Elias, you're on AXP. How are you doing, man?
Hey, how you guys doing?
I'm really well. I'm really well. So what specifically did you want to talk about?
Yeah, I'll just jump right in. So I came across an argument on TikTok, actually, that I didn't know how exactly to respond to. So I wanted to call in and ask. So essentially the argument made, he quoted some scientists that I'm not sure if these scientists are familiar to you, but it was Emma Hilton and Colin Wright, I believe.
Yeah, I've heard of them.
And basically the claim was that gamete production was the defining thing of what determines your sex.
Yeah.
Which my understanding was that there was an important one, but not that it was the only considerable thing. And their argument was that sex was binary because there's no like third kind of gamete. It's either a lot of small ones or a few large ones kind of thing.
So
I wanted to see what you thought about that.
Yeah. So at risk, I don't want to turn this into a whole science lecture, but like just to be brief. Yeah. Right.
Go ahead, please.
Knowing me. So there are, unfortunately, not just to speak to those two in particular, I have had interactions with those two in particular, but there's lots more people out there like them. When talking about sex as something that's more bimodal than binary and kind of fuzzy around the edges, that's like not even remotely scientifically controversial, nor has it been for a very long time. Whenever I get into these topics and people are like, oh, bring me a science paper that shows, you know, a third gamete or whatever like that, I just like to show them like undergraduate college textbooks that talk about this. Like you can literally look up the new like Campbell's biology book for those who aren't, you know, biologists, it's like, this is like the tome that you have to memorize half of and then you get a bachelor's degree is what it basically is. But like the newest Campbell's biology, even it goes into trans people and intersex people. It says in the text, we now know that sex is not a binary system with only two defined outcomes. And that's not new. That's not news for anybody. That's just how it is. It's the same thing with the concepts of species or the concepts of any taxa. It's fuzzy. Tell me what a fish is. I freaking dare you. You can't. And like that, it's the same thing where if you try to define male or female in any way, you're going to end up leaving some things out and having some, well, except for this. And well, yeah, but this doesn't really fit that, but we call it this anyway. And we do this, and you know, so, you know, people who it's now become politically fashionable to try to make this, you know, a politically contentious thing, the same way, like with climate change, it's now a political thing. So now you can you say whatever you want about it. We try to boil it down to gametes. Cool. What if you don't make gametes? Do you not have a sex? Oh, well, no, it's the possibility of producing gametes. Okay, what if you don't have any gonads? Do you not have a sex? What if you have ovotestes, or you have tissue from both? Do you have both sexes now? Well, no, because we lump it into this. It's the same thing like, well, if you're XY, you're a male. Okay, what about women with Sawyer syndrome who have XY chromosomes and have given birth to healthy children? Well, yeah, but they have a phenotype of female, and you know, it's we still, well, if you have XX, it's definitely female. Okay, what about men with De La Chapelle syndrome? And then, you know, they still have a male presentation. Well, they still have the SRY gene that copies over. Okay, that doesn't always happen. And also epistasis is a thing. And sometimes you can have a completely male or female production without sex chromosomes involved at all, because the sex chromosomes are not necessary nor sufficient for this kind of development. So what about them? Well, and we just get on and on and on and on and on this production of, well, it's gametes. No, it's not. It's hormones. No, it's not. It's chromosomes. No, it's not. It's genes. No, it's not. It's this and this and this. When again, any introductory undergrad biology textbook is going to tell you that there's exceptions to every rules, including these ones. And at the end of the day, what I hope people understand, because I can rant about this for hours, because people who do this, they engage in typological thinking when they should be doing population thinking. At the end of the day, what I wish people understood more of and were remembered more of is that nature is what nature is. We as scientists are trying to put it into boxes. That doesn't work all the time. And everybody, every scientist knows that. It's not controversial. It's like if you had a map. If I had a Google Earth image of the planet, that's better than a map from the 1800s. But guess what? It's still wrong. Because the Earth is what the Earth looks like. And every map is wrong. And we have a saying in science, every model is wrong. Some of them are useful. When you have the model of sex, it's useful. It helps us explain nature. But nature doesn't give a crap about our explanations. And if nature defies our model, that's our problem, not nature's problem. So there's a lot more to say about this, but again, that's not what the show is about, and I will ramble literally all day. There's a lot out there. You can look up, you know, lots of other scientists that say the exact opposite of what those two in particular say. It has become a politically contentious debate, and that sucks, is all I would say about it.
It's become religiously contentious as well as politically.
Exactly right, yeah, because now we throw gender into the mix, and like people don't like to admit that there's a difference between sex and gender as well.
Yeah, and we only have politicians who are on the evangelical side who mm-hmm. are trying to make this a thing because they have to have the world conform to their Iron Age book.
Uh-huh. It's real frustrating, yo. And like, that's the thing is that again, I want to say it one more time because I can't stress it enough. Sex and gender being different things and both of them being fuzzy and non-binary, it's the way like I was taught in school. It's not controversial. It's only recently become this hot topic issue. And it's people trying to cram human beings into two little boxes. And I can guarantee you, if you look at 8 billion people and try to say that they're all one of two anything, you're going to be wrong. So like, it's just, I don't know, man. I will talk about this all day. I'm trying to hold myself back because I don't want to steal.
I'm just going to egg you on some more.
Did you have any other questions about this, Elias? Anything else you wanted to dig into?
Yeah, slightly. Yeah. Two small things. One of them, like, so I definitely understand what you were saying, and that's kind of more or less what I responded with, just without all the smart sounding stuff. There's one part I specifically didn't know how to respond to, which was another quote that they gave from those, I know from the same two people, but it was that to confuse secondary sex characteristics with their literal sex would be wrong. And because I referred to, like, I gave up the response that why are we boiling it down to just gametes now instead of chromosomes? Like, the chromosomes was the thing last month, now it's gametes this month. Right. Like, why are we boiling it down to just gametes now? And that, I just don't know if there is any way to respond to that, and there may not be, but I just wanted to know.
Basically, all I would say is, like, it's so the same people who will tell you that the term like uterus owner or birthing person or something like that is offensive because it boils women down to just their uterus are the same people who will also tell you I'm a real woman because I have a uterus and I can give birth and so on and so on. Like the instant, it's talking out of both sides of the face with this nonsense. At the end of the day, simply put, sex and gender are different things. Neither one of them are as laconic or as simplified or as strict and binary as we like to pretend. We have a model. Right. We have a model of nature. And nature is much more interesting than our simple little models can allow for. And if you're trying to boil somebody down to their gamete size or their chromosomes or whatever else, I'm not for it, man. I think nature's way cooler than that. And it's just when you can define a fish, maybe then you can define what a man is too, and it's not a plucked chicken.
Speaking of that model, I had one last quick question.
Yeah.
About the bimodal distribution graph or what curve, whatever it's called. I heard one objection I heard to that was that the x-axis would make somebody more male than someone else, and that didn't make sense to me. My immediate thought was that it's not that someone's more or less male than somebody else, but rather they have more typical male characteristics. Is that correct? Like, what is the x-axis?
That's the long and short of it. And so, like, that binary distribution they show, it's a teaching tool. It's a gross oversimplification. Even still, you can graph something with a ton of different variables in it. Look up non-metric multidimensional scaling. You get a bunch of clusters on a thing because you just plugged in, like, 30 different variables into one single graph, and it's still two-dimensional. It works. So give me the definite exact thing on this x-axis, I would say you're missing the point a little bit, because at the end of the day, what you have, this is as simple as I can put it, you have a multivariate system, because sex is not just one thing, right? It's a lot of things all happening at the same time. It's a suite of characteristics, right? So you have a multivariate system without one single solely determining variable, and without one single variable that has only two options. And when you plot that on a graph, when you put all these things together and throw them all and see what it is, you get a bimodal distribution, a strongly bimodal distribution, I'll grant you. Incredibly strongly bimodal, sure. But there's still a varium of continuation between those two things. And what you're saying is, yeah, but I've named the two lumps and I'm putting a line here and therefore that's all there is. And I'm sorry, that's just not good enough for me. Binary, for lack of a better word, is not good enough. That's where I come from with it. If you're looking at like trying to define these terms, I think, and like what exactly does this x-axis represent? I think those graphs are meant to be a little bit more descriptive than that, personally. But at the end of the day, a multivariate system with no solely determining variable, with no single solely binary variable, plotting out to something with two lumps and a varium of continuation between them does not sound like a binary to me. But hey, that's just my opinion, and I'm just one biologist out of many. And there are many who agree with me and many who don't. So please, I encourage everybody, just the same way as it would any science, go learn it. Go study it. Go pick up a genetics textbook and have it tell you about all the different versions of intersex out there. Go pick up a developmental biology textbook and tell you about all the different ways that can happen. Go talk about, go pick up an introductory biology textbook and have it tell you about all the variation. A human biology textbook that strictly says it's not fair to say everybody who's XY will look like this and everybody XX will look like that. Again, I can't stress this enough. This is not actually contentious. We're just playing like it is. It's like climate change. Everybody knows there's wiggle room and variation. What we're arguing about is interpretation. These other scientists out there, we all agree on most of this. The one thing we don't agree on is the interpretation of that. What do we do with that knowledge now? And there are those of us who say life is interesting and fuzzy, and there are those of us who say, no, it's very strict, and it fits in these two little things, and it doesn't work anywhere else, especially not here. Anyway, that's about all we've got for this one, man, but I really appreciate you calling in.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. Thanks, Forrest. Y'all have a great one.
Hey, take care, Elias. See you later.
Forrest, there are very few times when I feel like I can accurately speak for the entire crowd of people who watch this show, because they're so varied and so diverse, but I think I'm on safe ground in saying this. None of us mind when you go off on a science rant.
I'm sure there's somebody out there, dude.
I said most.
Especially another biologist who's just like, but he didn't mention this thing.
I said most.
Most. Right? We've got a whole bunch of people here, and I want to get through as many as possible. Yeah. I'm looking at line number 9. Are you seeing this guy?
Yeah, that sounds good. I'm not familiar with the topic, but if you are, go ahead.
I'm sure it's not difficult to get through, and even if you didn't know anything about this, I promise you, I think you'll come up with an answer.
Sounds good.
All right, we're going to go for Dan. No pronouns given. Calling in from Canada, says that he knows something we don't know about Lucy's footprints. Dan, how are you doing today?
Hey, good. How are you doing?
I'm awesome, man. So what exactly did you want to talk about?
Okay. Through Genesis apologetics, mm-hmm. I'm sure you're familiar with that.
Unfortunately.
They were talking about here the Laetoli footprints.
Yeah.
They found some. It's in a book called Contested Bones.
Oh, God. That book. That
yeah.
Don't recommend that one.
No.
Sorry, 10 inches long.
Yeah.
Or a size 9.5 shoe size.
Mm-hmm.
And they were saying, well, then Lucy's species...
Australopithecus afarensis.
Have made those footprints.
Yeah. So here's the thing, man. What I hope you understand is that like the Laetoli footprints are about 3.5 million years old, right? They're footprints in volcanic ash from a species that lived 3.5 million years ago, which is the time that Lucy's species lived. So they probably aren't specifically her footprints. A lot of times when you get into the media, they're trying to popularize science, they're trying to talk about it. Like, Lucy is like the poster child of this species. She's not a very good specimen. We have a bunch of other specimens from that species that are like way more complete. And here we have evidence in the region of that species, in the time period of that species, that shows bipedal walking. And it's not like temporary bipedalism. The shape of those footprints, the style and the angle and the way they are aligned, like that shows a commitment to bipedalism. They are always bipedal, just like we are. So let's say Lucy, or even Lucy's species, let's say no Australopithecus was there doing that at all, and this was some other, okay, whatever, it doesn't matter. All this tells us is 3.5 million years ago, something a lot like us and a lot smaller than us was walking on two legs through this area. That's still a heavy indication towards biological anthropology, you know what I mean?
Well, if these are 9.5, size 9.5, that's true. That would be a creature 5'9", approximately.
Maybe, or just a dude with a big feet that's a little bit smaller than us, who knows? I actually don't remember what exactly, it's off the top of my head. I don't remember exactly what the actual size or dimensions of these feet were, but what I can tell you for sure is that these feet, and here you can actually go to, I encourage everybody to do this, The Smithsonian has an easy thing. It's humanorigins.si.edu. And you can look up all sorts of hominin fossils, all sorts of evidence, all sorts of ways we know what we know. And they have a whole thing on the Laetoli footprints here. And they go over them. I double checked before the show to make sure that I could show this. And this is Australopithecus afarensis. I say the right time period. It's the right angle. The curvature of that foot, the inline hallux, the big toe being inline and not being off to the side to be an opposable appendage, the stride length, the heel-to-toe walking pattern, like all of this. It doesn't matter how big or how small it is. Maybe it was a big Australopith. Maybe a guy had big old feet. Maybe it was a different species. Who knows? Like, throw all this away. Take everything we think we know about it and throw it out in the trash. That's fine. What you can say for sure is that 3.5 million years ago, there was an ape that was walking on two legs. And a little while later, you have other apes that are walking on two legs that are a little bit bigger that are able to do cool things like make stone tools. And a little while later, you have other apes that are walking on two legs and making stone tools that are able to control fire. And a little while later, you have other apes that are walking on two legs and making stone tools and able to control fire that are sitting here on the screen talking to you today. And there's just a direct chain between all of these things. So again, even if we threw out everything we thought we knew, it's the same thing with any fossil. You know, if I find a fossil of a whale or whatever that's buried down 4 million years into the sediment, throw away everything I think I know. I don't know how to identify bones anymore. I don't know what a whale looks like anymore. I have no proof of anything. What I do know for sure is here's an animal that lived at a different time and doesn't live anymore and looks an awful lot like these other things. It's still really good evidence of evolution.
It's just the size of it, 5'9". Like Lucy would say, about 3 foot.
Did you not hear anything that Forrest just said?
Sure. Okay. I don't believe you, but I don't care. It doesn't matter.
Would be what?
Let's say it is really big. Cool. So what? What does that do?
It doesn't sound like a... Well, I think Lucy was some kind of chimp or whatever, but...
She was an ape.
Probably a knuckle walker.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
110% not that for several reasons. Do you want to start going through them or do you want to move on from that?
Oh, it was Owen Lovejoy. I think he's the one that...
Are you gonna answer Forrest's question or not?
He's Lucy and her species are definitely not chimps, right? So they're about a little less than 5 million years away from our common ancestor with chimpanzees. So way off from there. And she absolutely was not a knuckle walker. Her hips are not positioned properly for that. Her feet are not positioned properly for that. Valgus knee is not positioned properly for that. Her foramen magnum is not positioned properly for that. So like very, very no. Like that no part of her skeleton even remotely hints at her walking on her knuckles. Like no. She was an ape. We are also apes. So she is in our lineage. We didn't all come from Lucy specifically, but like that species is in our lineage. They are hominids, right? They're in this pile of human-like apes. So like, again, I can't stress this enough. You keep talking about the size of the foot and all this stuff. Even if I believed you, it doesn't change that much about like the big picture here. It might be interesting. Oh, neat. It's a new species. Doesn't disprove human evolution or even come any close to that.
Okay. Yeah, well, you said in a tweet to call and yeah, I'm you say we're apes. I know that we're not apes.
How are we not apes?
We're created separately.
So let's run through this. Let's brute force it together. Let's together. We're going to brute force this. We're going to go right through it. Do you think that humans are animals?
No.
Okay. Are we mammals?
Yeah.
We are mammals. Okay. So, and how do you know that we're mammals?
Because of the way we reproduce.
Not all mammals reproduce like us, but the vast majority of mammals are placental like us, yeah? And the actual definition of a mammal is mammaries. We lactate, right? And we have fur, okay? So here's the thing. Is a Subaru a type of car, right? A Subaru is a type of car. Can we agree on that?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So like if I were to say to you, yes, a Subaru is a car, but it's not a vehicle. Would that make any sense?
You say it like that. I just know that we're created separate.
Well, I'm trying to understand this with you, right? If I say that a Subaru is a car, but it's not a vehicle, that doesn't work, right? A mammal is a type of animal. All mammals are animals. A mammal is a classification of animals. So if we say humans are mammals, but they're not animals, It's kind of like saying a Subaru is a car, but not a vehicle. It doesn't really, really make sense, right?
Yeah, we're created separate.
Okay, so let's assume you're right. Let's assume that we were made separately. Sure, why not? But classification's still a thing, right? And so what is a man? What is an animal? Like, we know we're alive. We're gonna brute force. We're gonna go all the way through this. We know we're alive, right? So we're living things. What kind of living things are we? Well, we look at our cells. It all comes down to cells. We're motile. We have cell membranes. We don't have hard cell walls. We definitely have nuclei that are, you know, packaged up, and we have membrane bound organelles, right? Okay, so we know we're eukaryotes, and because we aren't autotrophic, we don't have chloroplasts or anything like that. Okay, so we can pretty well say we're probably mammals, maybe fungi. We'll get there later. We look at ourselves and we say, okay, we're multicellular, right? That makes sense. We don't reproduce by like filamentous budding or anything like that. Kind of straying a little bit away from fungi there, but also there's the whole situation of us having the spinal cord, right? So definitely not fungi now. We got past that. So we're in the phylum Chordata. We can get in there. What else about us? Well, we have these crazy, we know we're mammals. We got through that. We got through mammals. We also have these thumbs going on, crazy opposable thumbs. If you look at the tips of our fingers, we have fingernails. We don't have claws. We have these reduced canines. We have a reduced sense of smell. Really, really good vision, right? We're getting closer and closer. We're now in primate territory, right? So we're definitely primates. Check out my butt. Still don't have a tail. So that's going on. We have a kind of a short, stiff lower back. I've got really, really flexible shoulder joints. Definitely, definitely leaning more towards ape now. Also, I've got a hyoid bone going on in here. So that's going to land me in the hominin clade. And we move right on up to Homo sapiens by things like, I make stone tools. So I'm on Homo. I can control fire. I'm past Homo erectus. Got a big old honking brain and a flat, stupid face and a gross, tiny mouth. So definitely Homo sapiens. Like, you can go through this step by step by step, and you're going to get the same answer all the time. Humans are apes. We are primates. We are mammals. We are animals. Those are the things that we are. If you want to believe we're created separately, I'd love to talk about it with you, but like, that is the definition of us.
It's hard to believe, like, Homo erectus, like, they're around for like over a million and a half years using
long time
stone axes. This stone axes, like, we're in the Bible, it says in the feast, within 200-300 years, we're using bronze and iron.
Mm. Well, the Bible is wrong.
Very wrong on that.
with Homo erectus is actually the focus of my research. Like, they're one of my favorite species ever. And you're right, they were along for a very long time. They were the most successful species of human. I'm burping as I just ate a drink of other stuff. I'm so gross. I'm so sorry. They were the most successful species in the Homo lineage so far. They were around for a long time. And they had, what the hand axes weren't literally like a chopping axe. It was called an Acheulean hand axe. So it's kind of this triangular stone you'd use for whacking stuff. And that's also debated. We're still arguing maybe they're actually using that as like a source of smaller flakes. Who knows? But what we do know is we have strong evidence that they were able to control fire. That goes back around about a million years. They were definitely cooking their food at least, like, the evidence we have shows they were cooking as far back as 800,000 years, probably before then. But, you know, that's what we got hard evidence for. They were cooking food over a fire. They were making fire, controlling it deliberately, cooking food on it, making stone tools, probably had clothing because of how far they spread out over the world, almost certainly spoke. And there's a lot of debate in the biological anthropological community about like how we even classify them, because they evolved in Africa 1.8 million years ago and immediately start spreading out all across Europe and Asia and Indonesia. Like we find this place in Dmanisi, Georgia. It's got some of my favorite fossils ever at 1.8 million years old. And just the variation in that one site alone, you could make the argument there's like four or five different species there. And so you'll get this kind of difference in the crowd where you have Homo erectus sensu lato, loose sense, Homo erectus sensu strictu, specifically this one kind. And these guys are actually Homo picanensis, and these guys are actually Homo floresiensis, and these guys are actually Homo ergaster. And you know what I mean? So like, yeah, they were on for a long time and they did a lot with stone tools. Isn't that freaking dope? And then you look at human civilization, we did a lot with stone tools too. Our species did a ton of stuff with stone tools. And then we started getting into melting metal and stuff. And like, we went that way pretty quickly, like rapidly growing. The time difference between like the first like metal tool, the bronze tool, the time between that and right now with you on this horrifying machine of silicon and glass watching my ugly mug burp into the microphone like a freaking caveman, the time between those two events and the production of the first stone tools to then, tiny little thing. And so like, yeah, dude, it's freaking cool. It's radical. It's wild. It doesn't do anything to make the case that we're not animals or we're not apes or that we're not special. It's just cool. Like, I think, like, I'm sorry, I don't mean to just ramble at you, but like, I think you're seeing these amazingly cool things and you're trying to find like a bone of contention with them. And you're missing out on the fact that they're just fucking cool.
I just like stone axes for like we have
hand axes. Hand axes. They whacked at them.
And there's like, these are humans.
Yeah.
Like they're humans. They're ancestors. They're descendants of Adam and Eve. They weren't around for a million years looking at a stone axe. Like, humans are smarter than that.
So here's the thing. It depends on how you use the term human. It depends on what you mean by human. Because if I tell you humans evolved 200,000 years ago in Africa, I would be correct because I'm talking about Homo sapiens. But if I said humans evolved 2.6 million years ago in Africa, I would also be correct because I could talk about Homo habilis. Anything in the genus Homo can be called a human. So yeah, they were humans, but they weren't our species. Our species is only 200,000 years old. And we use stone tools for most of that as well.
And there's absolutely no evidence of an actual Adam or Eve.
We'll get there too. We'll get there.
There's a whole thing on that one too.
Yeah, that's a whole other conversation.
That's also a complete, total mislead used by theists all the time to confuse people who don't understand how genetics work.
Yeah, talking about Y chromosome Adam and mitochondrial Eve. Oh, yeah.
And how you could actually end up with two of those and not actually have those two as the origins. So,
My own eyeballs out like Oedipus if I have to go through that shit. But yeah, like that's like, are you understanding? Like, are you smelling what I'm stepping in here, Dan? Are you understanding what I'm talking about? Like, it's just what you're saying are all these really cool things that we know about humans. Things that give us a tremendous amount of evidence for human evolution and the history of human civilization. I could go on and on for hours about those Homo erectus fossils and Demonesia and the amazing things they teach us about like human life and culture and what we are fundamentally. And you're going to look at it and say, well, yeah, but also Jesus and stuff. And like, I just don't understand why you're taking that extra step. Why not just see this as the beautiful, cool enough stuff that it is?
I look at Homo erectus, like the cranium size would have been still within the range of humans.
The very lower range. The very upper range of Homo erectus was within the very low range of Homo sapiens. So, no. And there's also potentially intermediates between them. It's kind of debated as to whether or not Homo erectus are our direct ancestors or whether we have Homo heidelbergensis as an intermediary in there. Like, again, the damnable misery of this field of study is that we actually have too many human fossils going back several millions of years, and it's really hard to put them all in order because if you take a look at the skeletons between Jim and I today, you might say we're different species. You know what I mean? If you look back far enough back, it's one of us is this weird skin, any large-headed nerd, and one is a dashingly handsome gentleman. And so, like, if you look at the variation in human populations at this moment, you know, a bioanthropologist of the future might try to separate us into different species, and that's the problem that we have now, is that there are way smarter scientists than I'll ever be who are arguing that Homo habilis doesn't actually exist. It's just kind of this wastebasket species. There's this weird intermediary, and maybe Homo rudolfensis is actually the same thing as Homo habilis. Maybe they exist at the same time and they're different species. Maybe they're not. Maybe one's just freaking weird looking. We have Australopithecus sediba and these things that we have like only one fossil of, and we're not sure. Is this a strange one or is it a different species? It's in a new place at a new time with new technology. Does that mean something? Like, half the point of this field of any field of study, especially dealing with the past, is here's the information. What do you do with it? And what I keep trying to get across to you is that, like, if you take away every bit of our interpretation and just look at the bones on the ground, these are not humans, these are not evidence of this and that, these are brown lumps in the dirt, they still tell us an awful lot. And what they tell us just at face value, even if you don't believe our interpretations, at face value, they debunk the claims of the Bible.
Oh, no, no.
Yeah.
Were you saying Ardi? Were you talking about Ardi?
I didn't mention Ardipithecus. I didn't mention Ardipithecus.
Oh, I thought you did. Sorry.
No. I mentioned Australopithecus sediba. Ardipithecus rambidus is cool, but, like, he's just one dude. And I encourage you to check out, there's another great YouTube channel out there. You know, if you go over to my channel, just look up Forrest Valka, I did a video on what is a human, and I detail out why this is such a tough question for this reason. And the person I did that video with is Erica Gutsit Gibbon. She's a bioanthropologist PhD student. She studies this stuff immensely more than I do.
She's got a page-by-page debunk of
contested bones.
Yeah.
Yes.
She, for those of you who don't want to read the book because... Yeah,
I wouldn't
there's
either.
Good reasons. She actually goes through that book page by page and then presents all the evidence that debunks every claim, pretty much every claim they make. Yeah. They may get one or two things right.
You have to have a little bit of truth and a good lie. Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure they think they're lying.
No, that's the problem with it.
So I don't want to go quite that far. But yeah, there's definitely, I mean, that entire book, is you can just go through page by page, go look for real evidence and, you know, find out where they're completely mistaken on almost everything they say.
Right. And that's the thing, Dan. Is that what I hope you understand from this is that, like, what you're presenting to us here, and this is not to shame you, you've bought into this narrative that these people are making money by selling you. That's their job, is just to come out here and say, oh, evolution's not true, and here's why. But none of these things are new. This is some Answers in Genesis level just hogwash of people who sometimes are scientists who also believe in God, and therefore they're going to twist everything they know about science to the point where it comports with this, you know, with the Bible. And it just doesn't stand up to reason. And I'm not the arbiter of science knowledge here. Again, what I'm trying to get across is, like, none of this is new info. Nothing you're saying here is actually, like, any kind of challenging to anybody who knows how this stuff works. And I encourage you to go look up other people like Erica who study this stuff for a living, and who can tell you, like he said, line by line, why books like that and claims like that just don't hold water.
Okay. Well, just saying what you're saying, debunking the Bible, nothing debunks the Bible. So
except the Bible.
Except the Bible.
The
yeah.
Bible debunks the Bible quite a bit.
Jesus said that we were created.
So what?
And he can't lie.
Let me ask you a question, Dan. Like, serious question. Do you believe that, like, any part of the Bible is wrong?
Oh, wow. What a question. What's the follow-up question here?
That's a simple question. Do you believe that the Bible is completely infallible, or do you think that there's some parts of it that have to be interpreted differently? Do you think there's some parts that have maybe mistranslated over the years? Or do you think, like, page by page, cover to cover, it is a perfect book? It has no ever errors in it.
It's God-breathed.
It's a yes or no question.
It's God's word.
Dan, that's a yes or no question.
It's pretty simple.
It's the truth.
Okay, so let me ask you a quick question, Dan. Just in your understanding here, were humans created before or after animals?
After.
Okay, so then you would agree with Genesis chapter 1 here, where it says that God made Adam and Eve together. This is Genesis chapter 1. He makes all the water, the animals in the water, and the water brings forth every living creature that moves, winged birds, beasts of the field, blah, blah, blah. This is all in chapter 1 here. And then later on in the chapter, he says, now let's make man in our image and our likeness, and he makes women and men together at the same time to have dominion over the animals that he just created. So he makes the animals first, then he makes humans. That's what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then you would disagree then with chapter 2. Because in chapter 2 here, right after that, the same page, he makes Adam, and then he says that it's not fit for Adam to be alone. I will make helpers for him. So out of the ground, God made every beast of the field and every bird of the heavens and brought them to the man to decide, and Adam decides what to call all of them. And then after that, he puts Adam to sleep, takes one of his ribs, and makes woman. So in chapter 2, he makes men, then the animals, then woman. So chapter 2 is incorrect, is what you're saying.
Chapter 2, like Genesis 2:19, it said, now the Lord God, you can put had formed. Like he's saying that he had formed already. Like it was like a summary from chapter 1.
Okay.
Why would the summary be different than chapter one? Most summaries tend to follow the exact same flow that they did in the book to make them make sense. And so now you're just interpreting the book and attempting to harmonize the fact that you have two completely different stories of Genesis all in the same book. And those aren't the only differences, right? In one, God is seen as omnipotent. And the other one, God doesn't know where Adam is.
That's true. Yeah, several times where God doesn't know what's going on.
Yeah. And you can harmonize that. You know, there are apologetics, but now you're interpreting the book. And so you can't make the claim that the book is 100% accurate, have this type of inaccuracy, and then just apply your own interpretation to the book and still have it be 100% accurate, because now you just can't do that. It just doesn't work that way.
There's also...
And that's not the only one that's there.
No, God, no.
Yeah.
Genesis 32:30, Jacob said, I have seen God face to face, and my life has been preserved. That's what he says. And then you go over to John, book of John, chapter 1:18, no man has seen God at any time. So is it, what's going on? You know what I mean? Like, if you want to say, well, this one's misinterpreted, okay, there's 1,000 more like that.
Yeah.
I should have brought my Bible from home. I've got all these written in it.
Yeah. And you can also look at what did Jesus ride into to Jerusalem on? An ass or a horse?
Right. It's both, actually.
It's both, actually. And why is it both? It's to fulfill two completely different so-called prophecies is the only reason for it.
Mm-hmm. He also makes here in Genesis, he makes the heavens and the earth, and then he makes the stars later. But in the book of Job, he says that the stars were all singing before he laid the foundations of the earth. How are they singing before he made them?
How do stars sing? They're not.
That's another good question. In Revelation, it says that the stars will fall from the sky and land on earth. Earth. Stars are millions of times bigger than the Earth. How would they land on the surface of something?
Have you seen the movie Greenland?
No.
John was interpreting a vision of what he saw. I mean, the word stars, what does he know? Like, you seen Greenland, how...
Okay, so then he was wrong.
The atmosphere?
He was wrong,
and your statement that the Bible is 100% accurate isn't true. You can't have both things here. It's either 100% accurate or it isn't. And if John was wrong, then guess what? The Bible is not 100% accurate.
Well, maybe he didn't have the word that we have now.
Right, but that's the thing, man. If I don't have the word for something and I tell you something that isn't true, I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So John was wrong, and then it's in the Bible. So there's something in the Bible that's wrong, right?
Well, I'll be resurrected one day, and we'll...
That's not... I got another one for you, and we'll make this the last one there, Dan. I just want to know, like, in chapter one, we'll go back to Genesis, easy peasy stuff, right? He, in verse 3, makes light, but then later on, he goes on to make plants. But then after that, he makes the sun and the moon. So how did plants survive without sun, and how was there light without stars?
Well, I don't have all the answers, but...
Right.
And that's the thing, man, is like, what you're doing here is you're carrying this massive baggage, a millstone around your neck, if you will. And you're trying to justify and make excuses for this. That's just plain wrong. There's so many things in this book that just are not true. Factual inaccuracies, historical inaccuracies, scientific impossibilities, things that don't make any freaking sense to anybody. And you're caught up with this baggage of saying, no, it has to be right. And if it doesn't make sense, if it doesn't fit with my logic, then I must be wrong and something else is it. There's some deep secret here and we'll all be resurrected. Like, what I want to ask you, Dan, and I mean this, would you ever, ever use this kind of thinking for absolutely anything else, ever?
What do you mean? What kind of thinking?
This faith-based thinking.
I've read the Bible.
I have also read the Bible. I have also read the Bible, and I've also read other books, which is why I don't believe the Bible. Like, I want to understand, like, why do you have this baggage that you're carrying, and would you use it for anything else? Would you ever, if I were to sit here and talk to you about, pick your favorite thing, why it stormed today? And you're like, well, yeah, it stormed because some clouds formed and then there was lightning. No. You don't understand. It was actually Gilgamesh who called the storm into existence. And you're like, no, that's not. But hey, we'll all meet Gilgamesh someday. We'll all go back to the Euphrates and we'll all be there. And it'll, like, if I gave you the exact same kind of thinking you're giving me, the exact same kind of arguments, would you believe me? Would you do what you're doing right now for anything else, if I asked you how planets form, if I asked you about plate tectonics, if I asked you where disease came from, the Bible says you can cure leprosy by sprinkling the blood of a dove on it. Now we have only medicine, yo.
People. Only for the rich people.
Only for the rich people,
yeah,
right.
The poor people have a whole different set of
just
spell to,
like,
to cast.
Flip, dude. Like, how, that's what I'm trying to get across. I don't understand. Would you use this kind of faith-based thinking that you're using for anything else ever in your life?
Oh, there's only one Jesus in the Bible. I've read the Gospels. And
again, you're not answering the question.
Not the question. Would you use faith for anything else? Would you ever take any other proposition, anything else, with the same kind of faith that you're using for this?
Let's say your car doesn't work. You go out today to start your car, it doesn't start. Do you use a faith-based process and just say, if I pray enough, the car will start? Or do you actually attempt to maybe take it to a mechanic or diagnose it yourself? What do you do? Do you just pray over it? Do you just say, it'll resurrect when I'm dead? What's your process for figuring out what's going on with your car when it doesn't start in the morning?
The car, well, when I look at everything around us, I don't see it as faith. I see it as a creation. Everything.
That's not an answer to the question. What's the process you use to determine why your car won't start?
What's the process I use? I try the key or whatever.
Right, but like that's what he's asking. If you tried the key, you're not using faith.
Yep.
You should just believe, right?
You should just pray to start the car.
Why wouldn't you do that?
You're a person of faith. You have great faith. You have faith in the Bible and faith in God. Why wouldn't God
start the car? The Bible says if you have the faith of a mustard seed, you can move a mountain.
Right.
Why wouldn't you just pray?
I think the faith is like believing that the fins can change into feet.
That's not an answer. We're asking you, would you use faith for anything else ever in your life? That is the question.
Well, I watched one of your videos. I don't know if it's a pachycetus or one of those creatures. And turns into a whale eventually, evolves over millions and millions and millions of years, whatever.
Yeah, no, Pachycetus is a whale ancestor. Dan, I'm going to ask you one more time, and if you won't answer the question, we're just going to end the call, because I have other questions for you, but if you're not going to be honest and answer it, there's no reason to go with it. Would you use faith in any other situation in your life besides what you're doing right now?
Would I use faith for my car?
Would you use faith for anything?
Is that what you're asking?
Anything. Would you ever use the kind of faith-based thinking you're using here in any other circumstance?
It's hard for me to understand what you're asking me.
That may be part of the problem.
Yeah. Is faith a reliable path to the truth? Is faith a reliable way to know true things?
Faith is, faith in my belief in God. That's reliable.
Is faith a reliable way to know what is true?
Well, with the Bible, yes.
So only the Bible.
It's only the Bible.
So if I have faith that you're four gerbils in a human suit, are you in fact four gerbils in a human suit if I have enough faith?
Yeah, I don't know. You asked me the questions, but
I am asking you the question.
Like say the pachycetus, how does that tail turn into a 25 foot?
I can get into it with you, but I don't believe you're going to actually have an honest conversation with me. Let me ask you a question, dude. The Bible condones and justifies slavery. And here in America, slave masters used the Bible to then tell their slaves that what they were doing was justified. People who wanted to keep slaves used the Bible to justify it, because in the Bible, it tells you how to keep slaves, where to get them, how hard to beat them. Is that good? Is that true? It's in the Bible. Should we take a faith-based position on this and say, hey, it's in the Bible, so it's right? Or should we say, rationally, owning another person is wrong, therefore, this part of the Bible sucks. We're not going to participate with it.
Slavery? I'm against slavery. And Paul talked about ending slavery.
Yeah.
Did he?
In
really?
Exodus, it gives you explicit instructions on how to do it. It tells you that if you beat your slave so that they don't die within 2 days, that's allowed. And you're only to be punished if you beat them so badly that they die within 2 days of the beating.
Well, the Old Testament moved on to the New Testament now.
Yeah, the Ten Commandments are in the Old Testament too, right? So we should forget about those for sure?
Well, that's true.
And being gay is also in the Old Testament, not in the New. Well,
yeah, so we should
just kind of throw that out. And apparently many Christians today have thrown out the don't get tattoos thing.
Right. Don't touch the skin of a dead pig. I still play football, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So maybe you're right there, but I don't think you are, because you can go out of the way with that, depending on, and that's a big problem with the Bible. But anyway, you are one of the nicest three gerbils in a human suit to have called, and I have complete faith that you are, in fact, three gerbils in a human suit.
We have a book that says it.
Yeah. If we don't now, we'll write one.
We'll write one, and then it's true.
Yeah, then it'll be true. But everything that we, you know, evolution is simply a fact. You can go look at it. It's the change in allele frequency in a population over time. That's all it is. Really simple.
That really boils down to it. I guarantee, we only have 10 minutes left, and I wanted to try to squeeze somebody else in.
Yeah, let's try to do that. Yeah, we've been on this call for 34 minutes.
But Dan, I guarantee you believe in evolution, too, because you believe in free changes in you know, the heritable characteristics of the population over the course of multiple generations. But we've got to move on. We've got a bunch of other stuff to do, but I appreciate you calling in, and I hope you call back again sometime. Hope you call back in on Skep Talk too, because I'm on that show, and we're not on as much of a time crunch. We go real long. We can dig into all your questions. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. Bye bye.
What are you thinking?
I've got to go through the super chats really quick because I didn't do that earlier, and we were on that.
Call we did only part of them. So
yeah, we were on that call for a minute, and we got a bunch of super chats. Let's see here.
I think you ended with
Wondering Walrus is what I do. So we've got Dylan Flynn, $4.99 to say Forrest and Jim are looking excellent today. Why? Thank you.
Thank you.
$20 from IME Trader,
I think.
IME Trader? I don't know, man. That is actually, they spelled it out. IME Trader. Christian says to Johnny, I've been studying evolution, and I find it ridiculous that you believe a chimp and an ape could mate to produce a human baby. I've heard things almost as ridiculous, y'all.
Yeah.
Tommy Gallipoli sent $1.99. Theists project more than a movie theater chain. £5 from Dr. Scroob. And then we've got another £20 from Leonidarium. Leonidarium. Many are capable of discipline, complex self-awareness, or ideating hypotheticals. Religions have books that give them an order to life. What is the closest secular equivalent for a Bible based on facts? What should it be? I think it's secular equivalent. There shouldn't be a textbook that is exactly this is all that's only true. Because
every science book ever written, and the most current ones at that.
Right. That's the thing. It's like even there's a reason why you have to buy a new updated edition of your science textbook every year. Number one, because these companies are making a gross amount of money by charging students out the butt. But the main reason is that the information updates. That's the whole.
It wouldn't
point.
Be a book; it'd be a library.
Right. That's man. I remember when I was starting my master's, and they gave us a textbook, and they were like, "Just so you know, by the end of the semester, I guarantee you this book will be useless." And sure enough, it was 3 or 4 weeks out, and they were like, "Yeah, by the way, chapter 15's wrong because we just found another set of fossils that actually had a lot of context, and what is in there, don't worry about it. We're going to actually, this is the new, Tyson Brady sent $5 to Forrest. How much would it cost me to hear your plans for Mercury? What he's talking about here is that I think that Mercury is useless current state.
The planet,
as it is. Because what's it doing for anybody? You know what I mean? It's just sitting there. It's a big old pile of rocks. And I'm saying, you know what a Dyson sphere is, right?
Yeah.
So we can't build a Dyson sphere. It's a Dyson sphere, for those who want to know, is like a giant solar panel that encapsulates a star to capture all the energy of the star. Well, sun's millions of times bigger than the Earth.
Yeah.
How on Earth are we going to build but we can build a Dyson swarm, a series of small solar
panels. Build a ring world.
Yeah.
Did you ever read that series of science fiction books from the 80s?
No, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So you get a series of solar panels that orbit the sun and you collect energy from those, a Dyson swarm. Where are we going to get all the resources? We don't want to mine the crap out of the earth, destroy ecosystems, destroy habitats, and then have to ship it all the way to the sun. It's going to be expensive. So we set up shop on Mercury. There are ice caps on Mercury.
Oh, right?
On the poles. There are parts of the craters and the poles that never see the sun. There are ice caps there. We can build a base on Mercury, mine Mercury for the resources, build the solar panel, send it right next door. That will provide enough power to build 10 more mining operations. And we do that over and over. We mine Mercury into non-existence, y'all. We mine it until it's nothing. And then we have all that power, and we use that power to then clean up our own atmosphere and then clean up the atmosphere of Venus. And so we have a second Earth-sized planet that spins.
But why do we need another planet? I mean, we could at that point
just expand out, right?
Adapt
into space. I'm talking about immediate living space, but you're right, because that would be the next step, is that we would have to invest heavily into biomedical sciences to the point where if you can't run a marathon on your 200th birthday, you are considered profoundly disabled, and people have charity events for you, right?
Yeah.
So we invest all this new energy. This would be an energy revolution and comparing like rubbing sticks together in the wild to like nuclear power today.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense to throw things down a gravity well and throw things back out of a gravity well if you don't have to.
You don't have to. Yeah. You don't have to. We got Mercury sitting there like an asshole,
we've got the Oort
not
cloud and
pulling
the
its weight, and we could be using it, and we could make things happen here. And right now, we look at the world we live in today, we're like stupid, filthy animals begging
for scraps.
What kind
of stuff did we pull out of
Uranus?
We could
have so much, but that's why we're friends, Jim. Y'all, I have a real plan, and when I rise to power, I will make this universe tremble at our presence. We will expand and become a galactic civilization overnight. But that was a super chat. I forgot what we were doing.
That's a super chat.
James Gall sent $5. Hello, Jim. Erica and Forrest only went for 5.5 hours. I feel cheated. They're talking about the last live stream we did.
Yeah.
Please rant, Forrest. And then what is this? Dogatkin 2018 is fun to explain the silver foxes. Oh, I know what you're talking about. I didn't understand what they were referencing. They're talking about an experiment done a long time ago, actually, in Russia, where they were breeding foxes to bring out different
behaviors. Domesticate them.
Yeah.
And they all turned into dogs.
Yeah, they separated them into different classifications based on how friendly they were, and like after like 2 or 3 rounds of only breeding the super friendly ones, they had to make new categories. It's so fast. I believe, if I remember correctly, that was back during World War II, and the scientist in charge of that actually got like kicked out. He got exiled for not believing Nazi rhetoric. Sarah Christine, $5. Forrest got some music notes in there. We don't talk about Bruno Carasis. Sorry. Can we get a sing song as a sound?
That sing song you did about that earlier.
Gosh. Yeah, I think she's talking about the in my last one of my last episodes of Reacteria. We talked about Bruno, the old astronomer.
But we can't talk about Bruno.
We can't talk about Bruno.
Right, no.
Answers in Genesis was wrong about some things. Shocker, I know. Head over to my channel, check it out. Sarah Christine, $5. By the way, do not sing that song or parody or anything. That song is copyright protected.
Whoops.
We don't want to. Oh, my God.
That's what we get for doing things in order and not jumping around.
Yep. Oh, my glob, dude. And then we just got another $19 from, I'm going to say this wrong, but Ifeomakalu. What a cool name. I said it incorrectly, but it's beautiful, and I bet it's more beautiful when you say it right. But yeah, that's great. And now we're right up at 6 o'clock. But we got this message in here.
Want
to do one more?
Let's do at least one more.
Okay, we'll do at least one more.
These all are citizens. just invitations for you to launch. Vamp.
Hey, by the way, if we're going to go longer, I'm also going to do the job that I have. If you happen to be in the Austin area between on June 25th, 2023, then please join us for a live studio broadcast of Talk Heathen and Atheist Experience. Talk Heathen will be hosted by Objectively Dan and Jamie the Blind Limey, and the Atheist Experience will be hosted by Christy Powell, love that guy, and Jimmy Jr. Doors open at noon, and we hope to see you there. You can be a part of these people. Show the audience again. Show them again. Do it. Do it right now. Yay!
Louder audience. Yay!
Oh, man. Yeah, so I'm glad we're going further because both of these sound good. I want to take this guy here.
Go ahead.
Does that sound good to you?
Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We got David, who's an atheist in Arizona. How would I bring up being an atheist to my students? David, you're on the Atheist Experience. How are you doing today?
Hello, Forrest.
Hey there.
Thank you for taking my call.
Hey, it's our pleasure.
Hello to Jim.
Hey.
So my question, so I've heard that you, Forrest, are an educator. I am an educator myself.
Mm-hmm.
My question to you is, do you ever have students asking you about atheism or what you believe?
Yes.
And how do you respond to them?
Depends on what I'm doing and where.
I work in a junior high. I don't know if you can share whether you work at university, high school, or junior high. I work in an area where the demographics are predominantly Christian, Mormon. And so when kids ask me, what do you believe? Do you believe in a God? And I wish I could just openly say I'm an atheist for this, for X, Y, and Z. But unfortunately, I'm always afraid that if I say, hey, I'm an atheist or X, Y, and Z, that it's always going to backfire.
Like
maybe they're going to go home to their religious parents. Parents are going to reach to the principal, and now I'm in trouble. So,
yep. So here's the thing, man. I'm an informal educator. So rather than having one set classroom, which I do from time to time, like I'll get hired to do like one semester for a place. But like generally speaking, schools, colleges, libraries, universities, whatever, will hire me to come out and do like workshops, stage shows. Maybe I'm there every week for a semester. Maybe I'm there every day for like a month or something like that. I do just like enrichment programs, basically. Like I'm going to bring extra science for a school that couldn't otherwise afford to bring in this kind of stuff. So that's what I've been doing for a little while. It's a lot more fulfilling for me personally because, number one, I'm insanely hyperactive and I can't sit down in one place for very long.
I don't think anybody's ever noticed that about you.
It's just shocking, right? But also because I get to bring, you know, really cool science programs to underprivileged communities, which are abundant where I live, because in this country we base, you know, school the school funding on property taxes, because if you're poor, you don't deserve an education, I guess. It's really dumb. The point is, if I'm in a public school setting and I'm around, you know, kids that have to be there, I'm not going to answer that question. And the reason why is, number one, it would be unethical for me to talk about religion in any positive, negative light, answer, talk about my personal beliefs, whatever. This is a captive audience. These kids have to be here for me to use 1 second of publicly funded public education time to talk about religion affirmatively, negatively, in any way besides academically. That would be wrong for me to do. Also, that now changes the way they're going to see me. It's no longer just, hey, here's Forrest and he's talking about, you know, whatever polymers today. It's looking at it through the lens of, okay, well, this guy's he believes like I do and he's saying this so I can trust him, or he doesn't believe like I do. What do I think about what he's saying now? Do I take it with more of a grain of salt? It takes away from their ability to be objective in the science lesson. And also it puts me into a box that they're going then to use to judge the rest of everything they see of me and about me. So like lots of my students that I have on a regular basis, I'm hired by like homeschool associations to come do enrichment programs over several semesters. And so like those kids have seen me for years. They know who I am. They know what I do for a living. They know that I'm on shows like this. They know me. I'm still not going to talk about it in the classroom, right? Because at the end of the day, that's what it boils down to, is an ethical issue. And when kids ask me about religious stuff or political stuff as well, who'd you vote for? Are you a socialist or a capitalist? Do you Democrat or whatever? That is the answer I give them. It would be wrong for me to answer your question. I'm sorry, I can't tell you. If, however, we're in a different situation where it's, you know, less formal, if I'm in a library, if I'm doing a free show, if I'm hosting a show that someone comes to see, if I'm doing a live stream, whatever, if I'm doing an event, I'm going to be at VidCon and NokoCon this year. I'm going to be there around people doing performances. If they ask me something, they're there of their own volition. That's fine. I don't care. You know, but like, and I'll be very upfront about it because I think it's important to normalize atheism. That's how I would handle it. If it's a public school classroom, okay, Taxpayer dollars, those kids have to be there. It is unethical for me to say what I believe and why in any capacity. And there are a lot of people that disagree with that. And that's fine, I guess. Here in Oklahoma, I've been a substitute at schools that have Bible verses written on the class, on the whiteboard every day. And that's just how it is. I think that sucks. And I think that's a misuse of public funds and public trust. But these small towns don't care.
Yeah, no, I get it. And I appreciate your input. It makes, you know, that's basically what I've been doing. But I was, when I heard that you were an educator, it kind of excited me. And I was like, I'm just genuinely curious to hear how Forrest handles that.
And it was hard, especially because, like, you know, I don't work in one single classroom all the time. But when I was getting my education degree, I had to be. You know, I was there a lot as the student observer and whatnot. And you're building relationships with these kids every single day. You're working with them and everything. And they want to know about you. And you have to draw that barrier, because otherwise you lose that professional stand. You know what I mean? So trigger now the comments of people saying, well, then they shouldn't also talk about their sexuality in the classroom. Don't be gay around the kids. You know what I mean? Oh my glob. I can see the comment section already. Can you not? Oh, maybe I've been being on the internet for too long, but I can already tell you where this is going.
Yeah, really. Yeah. No place good.
Anyway, I hope that answered your question. Jim, do you have anything you want to throw
in? No.
David, I appreciate you calling in. I hope that settles something for you, or at least gives you some comfort to know you're not alone in this.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you, you guys, for everything you do. I listen to you guys weekly. I love you guys' show. I love what you guys do. Looking forward to continue hearing all kinds of topics with you guys.
Right on. Fantastic. Man. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you, guys. You too.
Bye-bye.
Have we talked about the crazy people in the other room who actually allow us to do all this fun stuff?
I don't think we have yet.
We haven't?
Let's not.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
well, yeah. They're letting us go long, so we better.
Check out the crew, y'all. Look at them. That's actually a place.
Yeah.
Those humans exist.
And those folks are what allow us to come up here and bump our gums and look semi-good on TV. But there's one person who almost never shows up, and that's Justin, who answers all of our email.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And you think the calls are bad, folks. You have seen nothing. I don't think you were around when hosts were also answering emails.
I actually have an ACA email. I check it maybe once a month because it is a cesspool. I hear you. One time on a show, we were talking about vaccines, and I mentioned herd immunity and why it's important that enough people get vaccinated population. And I got an email about that. Like, does he really think we're just cattle calling us a herd? Oh, this is disgusting. You're aborted fetuses and blah, blah, blah. It's like, oh, yeah. My God, dude.
And so as much work as those folks do to make us look good, Justin takes the brunt of
the lunacy
in our email. And so we should, I always like to shout out for him as well, because he's often forgotten because he's never on, you know, next door.
We also have a new call screener today, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
I think she was in the shot of the crew. I don't know, but thank you to our call screener.
Yeah.
And thank you to our moderators in the live chat as well. I'm sure Katie and so many other people are in there, tearing people several new assholes for using all caps and for everything else they do. We do have a couple of the super chats here. Yeah. $10 from Thomas Neal. Amazing idea. But let's be honest, I don't want to do the research through the Bible to find the contradictions to show people like to discuss the topic. Publish yours. Dude, you can go. Skeptics Annotated Bible has a website you can go through. There are some other ones that did as well. Didn't Talk Origins have a Bible thing as well at one point?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. But honestly, Hannah and Jake have an amazing channel where they go through the Bible and read it. And they kind of point out their understandings here and there. If I had my Bible from home, I should have brought it. Mine is just dripping with highlighter and with notes in the margins and everything like that. I have a special color highlighter for every time God's evil. Just every single time he's an asshole. And then we also got Bjorn Kamitz. Kamitz, yes, Bjorn Kamitz sent 500 kroner to say, "Hi, guys, not a U.S. citizen, but I think your cause is an important one. Thank you very much. We agree. Now, if the U.S. had election to change the In God We Trust back to In Pluribus Unum, do you think the majority of U.S. citizens would vote?" I don't think it would pass. I would love that.
I don't know. We're seeing, I think one of the things that we forget is that the evangelicals make great talking points and great clicks because they're so controversial and stupid in what they say. Yeah. And they're, you know, in the rapidly shrinking minority. So I don't know about today, but I think in a couple of years, we could probably put that to a vote and get it back to E Pluribus Unum. And mind your business on the other side.
That'd be very nice.
Yeah.
It is crazy because, like, and this is, you know, very much, you know, flowery. I'm a very quixotic person. Yeah. So this is a little bit head in the clouds, but it's who I am. Is that, like, when I was growing up, I'm a millennial, I was born in 92. And, like, I was always taught by my parents' generation, just like, this is just the way it is, get over it. And I'm like, why are people starving? Why we have, like, cars and, like, helicopters and shit. Why do we not have houses? And they're like, that's just the way it is. And, like, my generation's game plan for the past 30 years has been to get into a position of clout and power that we can start to change things. And now we got Gen Z's crazy asses.
Oh, yeah.
And they're right up there on the front lines punching Nazis with us. And it's amazing. And we finally don't feel alone. And it's amazing. And I think back to, like, my grandparents' generation, like, these flower children and everything. And they're like, finally, the dream is starting to come true. I have so much hope for the future. Y'all and like you're right, I'm cynical right now, I don't think it would pass, but like honestly I like your perspective eventually. I like to think it would,
and I think it's sooner rather than later.
Yeah, definitely with the way things are going, TikTok is a hell of a place, and we're getting more and more atheists every day, people just asking basic questions. With that, we're 10 minutes over time. I think it's about time we start wrapping things up. Outro things. Just so you know, if you want, we'll be back I'll be back on June 11th with Seth Andrews. I've forgotten what the date
you
was on
that. You and Seth? Oh, my.
Me and Seth.
That's a show.
Oh, my. Yeah, I'm going to wear the same black. I'm going to get some glasses. I'm going to slick my hair back. And I'm going to be in here talking about, like,
the thing that we don't really talk about with religion is just how absolutely ridiculously insane it is, because it makes you talk like an idiot when you have to believe. And I'm just going to, oh my God, I'm doing my best Seth impression. That was bad. But I hope you're watching this, Seth. He's going to text me tonight like, fuck you. Really quick, before we get out of here and I embarrass myself any further, one last shout out to our crew, our moderators, our call screeners, and the audience is amazing. Thank you for coming out here and being alive in person in the show. You guys are all great. Jim Barrows, I always love hosting with you. You're a Barrow
always lab. Fun.
Super fun. Do you have anything else before we wrap up?
No, that's about it.
Okay. With that, thank you so much for tuning into the show. Have an awesome day and never stop learning. Bye-bye.
What will it take for you to start opening your eyes, to start questioning the bullshit everyone around you buys? You think it's setting up your business, what goes on between my thighs? I wonder when we'll be rid of your life.
Watch Talk Heathen Live Sundays at 1 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/YTTH and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callTH.